I have the great privilege of introducing our speaker today, our dear, beloved Rev. Terry. He was our spiritual director for a number of years here at CSL White Rock, and he's the reason I'm standing here. I think it was back in 05, my sister June, because at that time Terry was running two centers, one here in White Rock and one in Maple Ridge. So he'd go in the morning to here, then he'd run out to us in Maple Ridge at a little old church over 100 years old and run a session in the afternoon. There was about 40 of us attending at the time. And she says, you gotta hear this guy, he's so charismatic. Oh my God, you gotta hear this guy. So Penny and I think we hustled off there and we never looked back. And then when he had to dismantle that one, we followed him here to White Rock. So we live in Pitt Meadows, Maple Ridge, but we don't mind the drive, trust me. So he's very familiar to us. He's a brilliant teacher. Because of his teaching, I ended up taking a lot of classes, and then someone said, oh, gee, you could be a practitioner. I said, oh, sure, what's that? And here I am. So it's pretty easy. It's pretty fantastic. And he has a legacy of training so many of us, including a great deal of many, many ministers in this science of mind philosophy. In retirement, he continues to mentor ministers, counsel clients, officiate funerals. He said people are always dying to meet him. I know, that's a bad joke. Couldn't resist it. And today he's going to stick around after the talk and give a Q&A time. We're going to do like a sit around and chat with him about questions and answers, and I promise you that will be brilliant. I apologize to those of you on Zoom. We cannot run a Zoom part for that because we don't have the equipment to do so. So if you're here live, you can stick around and join us for the Q&A and have the lively discussion. It's actually one of the best things about having a speaker that we can do these things together when we're live. So I want to now welcome, my pleasure, Rev. Terry Shea.
So good morning. It's a great pleasure to be with you again today. It's been a while. What, 2 weeks? I'm so glad to be back. I want to take a moment to acknowledge people here. I want to acknowledge you, first of all, Yvonne. Your music has a quality that speaks to suffering, the human thing, you know, that we're all part of. And you speak to it so beautifully and so eloquently that's why we're touched by it. I think I'll walk away with, they'll walk in our footsteps as they walk away. It's beautiful, thank you. I also want to acknowledge you, Diane, and all of those in leadership who make this happen. And I want to remind you that they're making it happen for you. And so anytime you feel you can step up and be part of the making it happen, I know that they would be grateful for that. And you would be doing a very important spiritual practice, and that is being in service. So I wanted to just throw that out. There's a famous story told about Gandhi that a woman brings her ailing son to Gandhi, and she says to Gandhi, she explains that he's not doing well, and she says, tell him to stop eating sugar. And so Gandhi sits with the boy, he talks to him a little bit, he assesses what's going on with the boy, and then he says to the mother, bring him back next week. The mother says, did you talk to him? He said, bring him back next week. And so she goes away, and of course, she comes back the next week. She brings the boy, sits in front of Gandhi, and Gandhi says, stop eating sugar. The mother finally says, why didn't you tell him that last week? And he says, last week I was still eating sugar. The talk that I'm going to give you today has been 33 years in the writing. When I went to Reverend Marilyn's center as a neophyte, somebody who was arriving in a center for spiritual living for the very first time, I heard her say, God is all there is. I'm spirit having a human experience. Nothing outside of me needs to change so that I can be happy. And we're all here walking each other home. I heard her say those things, and I'll tell you, the first one, God is all there is, I thought to myself, oh crap, not more of this Christian.
Right.
Yeah, you know where I'm going. I realized when Tamara asked me to give this talk, by the way, you should know that as that wisdom kind of descended into me, I decided, and this was in 1990, to take that wisdom with me to my first center in California and to speak those four truths every Sunday. And then when I returned to Canada, I continued to speak those four truths every Sunday. So that's 33 years of speaking those truths, but I have never, ever given a talk on any of those four truths. And that's why I say it's 33 years in the making. When Tamara asked me to talk about it, I was excited. Excited to bring to you something that has been growing in me and continues to do so even to this day, even as recently as this morning. To say that God is all there is, in my present context, is not to say God's all that's important. God is what you should serve. God is what you should believe in. God is what... That's a pretty common understanding from the Christian perspective. But the Christian perspective, and to a very large degree, the New Thought perspective, has become commodified, sanitized, prettified, and been stuck in the corner for us to look at and admire. It is no longer the fierce spirituality that Ernest Holmes taught, or that the great mystic teachers have taught. It is no longer a fierce spirituality that is willing to engage with the idea of God. I'm going to say that I noticed that this first noble truth of religious science was conveyed by Georgia as life is all there is. And certainly God is life. And I heard Diane say, use God or any other word for God that you understand. But it's time to get fierce with this idea of God. It's time to look at it. You know, let me back up and say this. If a four-year-old came to you and told you that he or she was absolutely convinced of the existence of Santa Claus and the good things that Santa Claus was going to bring on Christmas, is there one of you out there who would say, oh my love, Santa Claus doesn't exist? No, what we would do is we would say that child has an understanding of life appropriate to the level of its ego development. If a 15-year-old came and told you the same thing, you still might not disabuse them of it, but you'd walk away thinking, what's wrong with them? And if a 25-year-old came and told you the same thing, you'd begin to wonder seriously what reality they were living in. And so on. You see where I'm going. You see, the idea that we have of God is one that is appropriate to the level of the ego development that we have. But our ego development, interestingly enough, has little holes in it. And one of the holes we have in it is that idea of the numinous. And when I say numinous, I mean from the word numen, meaning cloud. There's a great book on mystical understanding and knowledge called The Cloud of Unknowing. And the understanding and knowledge of God is most often hid in this cloud of unknowing. And so how do we come to an understanding of God? How do we get more comfortable with this God word? There are so many atheists. And let's get clear on this. Atheism is a very clear statement. It's not agnosticism. It's not, gee, I wonder about the existence of God. Atheism is really clear. There is no God. There is no God. Now, I'm going to share something with you about atheism, and you'll pardon me, it's in French, so I have to translate it as we go, but it's this. The contemplative finds himself face to face with atheism. Not the atheism that is common to those who do not believe, but each one of us carries at the center of our being, painfully, an atheism proper to us. As strange as that may seem, before becoming an expert on God, we must first experience the atheism at the core of our being. Don André Louf, L'homme intérieur, the interior man. So let's get clear. When we graduated from the four-year-old Santa Claus belief in God, we entered into a realm of atheism, not knowing what God is, or if there is one. And when we were confronted with the things of growth and life and challenge and sin and all the stuff that we get, look at people going like this when I mentioned sin, right? And all of these things that are part of the maturation of the ego, we decided there was no place for God. Well, now here we are back, searching for this God. But we're not comfortable about calling it God, because it has way too much to do with that earlier stage of our development. What is called for is that the idea of God in us mature, and that we are the agents of that maturation of an idea of God, one that is appropriate to who we are now, a God that serves us now. And when I say serve, I'm not talking about that wonderful idea of God as a cosmic vending machine, and you go to it and you say, I need to win the lottery, crank, and boom, there it is. We're not talking about a God that serves in that way. We're talking about a God that serves as the core of our life. So to come back, if God is all there is, then what does that mean for me? What does that mean for the things I'm struggling with every day? For health and finances and the world situation? What does God is all there is have to do with that? Does it serve something in me that needs to find a way to express? If it doesn't, you know, I long ago stopped writing God as G-O-D. Now I write it as G-D. Why? Because I am absolutely certain that when I say God, I am not talking about the same thing as you think I'm talking about. I'm certainly not talking about the God that you're thinking about. I would guess that every time I mention God out there, there is somebody who goes like this. Not that word again. Not that word again. But what I'm doing is, when I say that, is I'm saying, Norm, challenge the idea of God that you have. It's not big enough for you. It's not grown up enough for you. And most of us are in that situation. So when I say this is a talk that is 33 years in the making, it's because the God that I believe in is constantly growing in my consciousness. It is constantly evolving. I remember when I was teaching ministerial, one of my students said that he went to have a conversation with someone about God, and the guy he was talking to, and the guy said, "Oh, I don't believe in God." And he said, "Oh, well, tell me about the God you don't believe in." And so, of course, he started talking about, you know, the Hebrew God and the murder and the death and wiping out all these people and God who creates cancer in children and blah, 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 blah. And my student, to his credit, said, "I don't believe in that God either. He sounds like a monster." Well, that God is a monster, and it's appropriate to the level of ego development of the person who is you're talking to. But let's face it, if we all stayed five-year-olds, well, I guess we'd have the society we have. No. If we all stayed five-year-olds in every aspect of our lives, we would have an absolute chaos of life. But we have to be engaged in the maturation of the God in us. So how do we do that? Well, I have one simple answer to that. God is found by subtraction. God is never found by addition, by things we add to God. God is found by the things that are taken away from our understanding of God. We simplify God. We make God less of what it has become as part of that sanitized and prettified spirituality standing over there in the corner. And we make of that God something simpler and radically, radically different. I'm going to ask you to say something with me. Now, first of all, I'm going to ask you to go. Take a breath and relax. Take a breath. Together now, God is all there is. Together,
God is all there is.
How did that feel? There's some, and there's some. Mm-hmm. I'm happy no one is running from the room. But this is the point. We need to feel ourselves into this new understanding. We all admire the spiritual path, the walk of our great spiritual teachers. We admire them. If you're a traditional Christian, per se, you worship Jesus and his spiritual path. If you're like me, a kind of a mystic, I revere my mystic teachers. But fierce spirituality is not admiring their journey or even admiring them for taking the journey. It is making the journey. It is walking the walk. It is stepping into the darkness. It is struggling with those issues that feel so overwhelming sometimes. And finding something in us that responds to it. And that which responds to it is the God that we are, the God that is all in all. I had an interesting experience recently where I was speaking in a center where the comfort with God was a lot higher than here. And so I can just, you know, I spoke in the Unitarian Church, they never invited me back. And they said to me, "You said God too much." And I understand that. God is not part of their social program-driven spirituality. And that's okay. This other group, much more comfortable with God. But boy, when I started talking about non-duality, when I started talking about oneness, oh, then the hackles went up. What do you mean there's no evil? You don't have the luxury to believe in good and evil if you're part of a New Thought teaching. You don't get to say that. You don't get to claim that some things are evil and some things are good. You can if you want to step back into a dualistic religion. But God is all there is essentially monist, right? Not monotheistic, but monist, one thing. Are you bold enough? Are you fierce enough to live in a world where Donald Trump is not evil? Are you bold enough and fierce enough to live in a country? I'm going to say it. Where the subjugation of indigenous people is not evil. It was certainly a serious error in judgment. But it cannot be claimed to be evil. We cannot call things evil unless we're willing to be subject to that evil that we have created. We cannot call ourselves God-fearing unless we're willing to fear that God that we have created. You see, the challenge of that first and most fundamental belief of what I call the Four Noble Truths of New Thought is that there's only one thing. And what we are called to do is to see ourselves as that one thing expressing. Do I always love enough? Do I always serve gladly and joyously? Do I always give generously? No. But that doesn't mean that I am less divine, less the one. It just means I'm not living that way. I'm making a different choice. And in that is everything. In that is everything. To know the great good and to know that I oftentimes choose lesser than is the beginning of wisdom. But if I'm not willing to know the greater good as one and as my life, then I will never question what I do from the right perspective. Don't seek God. I'm telling you that right now. Do not look for God. Look for the obstacles to God. Look what's in the way of you knowing more about that which is God. You're going to step out of this place today and you're going out into your lives and you're going to do all the things that you normally do on a Sunday. And it'll be wonderful. And there were parts of it that'll be not quite so wonderful, perhaps. Are you willing to see God in that, too? Are you willing to take out of everything that you're experiencing, everything that is not the oneness of love itself? If you are, then you have become fierce in your spiritual work. and you will reap incredible good. If you're not, then you will derive some joy, comfort, camaraderie, friendship, love from a group like this, but you won't be getting the best of it. When Tamara and I talked about doing this, we talked the four noble truths. And she said, oh yeah, you know, the walking each other home thing. And we all know Tamara's really a community person. I'm not. You know, when I was in the monastery, let's face it, I chose a monastery where a whole bunch of solitaries lived together and didn't talk to each other. So I'm not a community guy, I gotta tell you. I am a hermit, a solo mystic. So Tamara said, oh yeah, the idea of we're all walking each other home. And I said, yeah, but Tamara, you don't start there. That's why it's the fourth one. And that's why God is all there is the first one. It's the big one. It's the big frog. You know, you got to swallow that one first. And then God is all there is. That must mean that I am spirit. Not a spirit. I am spirit. Having a human experience along with each and every one of you. And guess what? We're all the one spirit, and we're all having the same experience. It looks a little different based on our personalities and our choices, but it's still the one experience. If there's anything we know about that which I call God, and maybe that's a more comfortable place, is that it is love. And it looks like you. It's got your face, your hands, your heart, your eyes. God is you. Let your idea of God go. And then let God be you for a moment a day. And then add to 2 and 4 and 6 and 8. When I was a young monk, my spiritual director said to me, he gave me some beads. And he said, take these beads and go and say this affirmation 100 times a day. And so I did. And I came back and he said, how did that go? And he said, okay, now say it 200 times a day. And away I went, and then I came back, now 400, now 600, now 800, now, and no, not that, it was actually doubling every time. So not 200, but now 400, 800, you know. And finally, I was up to about 6,000 a day. It doesn't even matter what I was saying, but you might consider saying God is all there is. One night I went to bed, and I had my little beads in my hand, and I was trying to get in those last few hundred before I fell asleep. But when I woke up, my beads were still in my hand, and the first thing I said was my affirmation. I didn't know whether I had continued praying all night in my subconscious or not. That was a transformational moment for me. Because in that waking up moment of saying that affirmation, I realized that I was truly living the life of God. That I had gone from having to make it happen to just letting it happen. Our life in God must be a an allowing of what is to happen in us, through us, and as us. If you're comfortable, I invite you to close your eyes and go with me now. To that place of knowing, at the very core of our being, that that which is God is who and what we are. It always has been and always will be. That our objective is to be lost in that truth. That God is all there is. To be immersed in it, to be bathed in it, to be lost in it. It is the greatest truth there is. It is all there is. And so I acknowledge now for myself, with deep gratitude, this knowing. But the heart that beats in me, the breath that moves through me, the thoughts of my mind, and every single movement of every cell in my body is God expressing. And I let life be. I let it be the gift that it is. The love that is expressed, the givingness of spirit that I am. So ends the lesson, and so it is.